good friends.
Thanks for coming on the podcast today. Really excited looking at what you've done on LinkedIn and Nortech Global. I wonder, could we start by just getting a little bit of a brief idea of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, my name is Richard. Currently, my job role is general manager for Nortech Global HVAC for Europe. So we are an industrial and commercial HVAC company, heating, ventilation, air conditioning. And I have responsibility for running our European business, which is predominantly the UK, Belgium, and France, and our export business. And as the general manager, I oversee operations, finance, HR, sales, marketing, product engineering, The whole remit of the company. Nortech is an American company with a long history established through multiple different brands which have come together over a number of years.
Okay. Yeah, it seemed from your website, it looks great. It was started about 100 years ago, is that right, in St. Louis?
It did. The original Nortech company did. And then over the last century, there have been various acquisitions and amalgamations of different companies coming together, different cultures, different product ranges, different brands, including the brand name we trade under predominantly in Europe, which is Resner, to form what today is known as Nortech. I've been at Nortech for about 2.5 years.
Oh, okay, yeah. So how did you become a general manager? I understand that you've been a general manager, but you've also got a background in HR.
Correct. So I am my background, my training is predominantly in human resource management. It's where I've spent a large portion of my career. I joined Nortech 2.5 years ago as the HR director for one of their divisions. And through a restructuring process, which took place about 15 months ago, I was asked to become the divisional director for the Belgium and the UK businesses, and then subsequently, middle of last year, the general manager for Europe. And move out of HR into a general management position, which unusual for HR people, but predominantly I think that was driven by my leadership capabilities and my change management experience.
Yeah, leadership and change, obviously they're huge for any business. They can be difficult to deal with. Do you think that your HR background would come in really useful with dealing with change and dealing with people and how they react to the changes?
I would agree. I've ran and been involved in multiple change programs, from downsizing, from mergers and acquisitions, from culture change, safety improvement, customer segmentation programs for a large proportion of my career, you know, starting predominantly with Ford Vistia and then through to Pilkington and Sandvik and latterly Nortech. I think my HR background, first of all, gives me a very good understanding of the legal basis of how you can do change, so what you can and can't do as an employer.
Interesting. Yeah.
And there are boundaries, but there's also, you know, there's also the right of organisations to run their companies as well. So I think having that legal understanding is extremely helpful. But then having been exposed to multiple different workplaces, unionised, non-unionised, white collar, blue collar, you get a good understanding of how people are probably going to react, and that then now drives my planning and my detailed planning around when we run change programs. And we spend now probably as much time planning a change program and understanding what is it that we want to do and why, as we do actually executing the change program. Because I figure that people will come along with change if they have a full understanding of why we want to change something. So that why is equally as important, if not more important, as to the how you're going to do the change program.
Yeah. So you spend more time nowadays fine-tuning why it's going to happen and then being able to explain it to them, and then launching it is, I guess, easier as a result.
Absolutely. The launch, in theory, should probably be one of the easiest parts of a change program.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we start now saying, right, what do we want the end to look like? Why are we actually doing this change program? Because change for change's sake is usually going to end up putting your organisation in not a very good position.
Yeah.
So are we doing this because we want to drive profit? If it is about driving profit, let's not be scared of that. That's what most organisations exist for. Is it about driving revenue? Is it about upskilling? Is it about downsizing? Mm. Is it about changing the way we deal with our customers? What is it that you want the end goal to be? And then work backwards. Be very clear as to why we're wanting to make that change. Is it competitive pressure? Is it technological change? Is it product variation? Is it general financial performance? And then you can start to pull together what I consider to be a jigsaw as to why you want to do that change. And then you can, from there, you can work out the how. And what we tend to do now, what I tend to like doing is I I then like to bring one or two people in who haven't been involved in that process and do what we call, what I call a red team, get them to actually have a look at it and criticize it and try and pull it apart. So we are confident that we have covered what it is we are proposing to do from all different angles. People are your most valuable resource in the organization, and you should be very clear about what it is you want to do in terms of decision making, and you should try and make that execution as clear and as concise and as disciplined as you possibly can to make sure that you put yourself in the best possible position to take your people along with you.
Yeah. Do you see changes very quickly when you implement them? I guess different ones take different times, but do you generally have a timeline for how long that the change has to be implemented by, and you know, any factors that may change the process?
Yeah, any change program, we start off with what is it that we want to do, what do we want it to look like, and when do we want it to be completed by. Otherwise, if you leave that a bit open-ended, it can drift and drift and drift. So we work backwards as an organization, and my team, with myself, you know, we have a very clear end goal and an end date. And we work back to, depending on the complexity of what it is you're doing, will determine your timeline. You know, some change programs, if you move quickly and swiftly and you can bring your employees along with you, you know, you can be talking a matter of months. Others, if you are talking about a plant closure or, you know, a big cultural change program, you are probably talking 6 to 8 to 9 to 10 months for a plant closure, probably. For a culture change, if you're being really honest with yourselves, probably in excess of a year.
Yeah. It must be, there's so many people that you're looking after in different areas. It must be really exciting. Do you really get a buzz out of it?
Yes. My job is about leading people, getting the best out of people. One of the lessons I've learned as a general manager is that you can't be an expert in everything, and you have to rely on the people you have around me and the teams below them. And actually motivating them, setting them clear objectives, setting standards, what you will and won't accept, and then sharing the successes with them is a real positive part of the job. Alongside that, you have to occasionally deliver bad news and make tough decisions. And that goes with being in a leadership position. But it is great fun. I have the pleasure and the honour of, you know, working with colleagues in Belgium and in France and here in the UK. And a lot of colleagues in the US as well, which for me, working for Nortec, was a new experience in my career.
Yeah, because it's a truly international company, isn't it?
It is going that way, yes.
Yeah. So how do you deal with when there is a problem? How do you deal with people who don't understand, or maybe somebody doesn't agree with the culture shift or are unhappy about you downsizing or something like that? Do you have certain ways to deal with them, or does it change for each individual situation?
So we don't assume, and this is a lesson I've learned in my career, that everybody's going to react the same way, and you have to remain flexible and adaptable. You are going to get majority of people that will come along with you, but as you say, you'll get those that will be resistant for some reason, and it's about trying to figure out why they are resistant and unlocking that view or that thought. And this is why the understanding the why we want to change is so critically important, so that you can then have a much more focused one-to-one discussion with an individual and walking through why it is we want to do something and why we think it's the right thing to do for the business, why we think it's the right thing to do for employees and for customers.
Yeah.
And actually just accept that you're going to take that time to do that. And, you know, experience has taught me that an hour committed and invested doing that will save you probably 10, 12 hours down the line.
That's so true. Yeah.
Now, you know, some people will say, well, some people will just be resistant. And yes, you get, you know, a very small percentage. Well, and this is where I think my HR background comes in, because then, you know, I'm very well aware of what we can and can't do as a company. And at some stages, you do have to get to the point where you say, well, look, we've explained the why, we've explained the how, we have gone through the, you know, we've talked to you over and over again. If you don't accept it, well, then now I'm sorry, that's your problem. We are going to move on as an organization. And you know, you have a right to do that as an organization. You have a right to do that as an employer. You must manage the business, not necessarily just the individual.
Yeah. Well, that's where the tough decisions come in. Yeah, definitely.
And then you get into a discussion with that individual as to whether they're going to come along with you or whether they want to pursue a different career path.
Yeah. So what are some of the changes or initiatives that you are most proud of?
I think safety always kind of stands out. A number of places where I've worked, you know, we've really driven the safety culture. This isn't just about safety from a compliance perspective, which is actually quite easy to do. This is about behavioural safety. This is about getting people, getting employees to want to work safely, to want to take ownership around their own safety and the safety of their peer group.
Oh yeah.
And actually coming forward with safety ideas and how to improve the working environment. So everybody can read the Health and Safety Act, and you know, we know we have to have a machine guard there, or we must do this. But to get people to stop and think about safety, both at Pilkington and Nortec, you know, undertaken some behavioural improvement programs, which have been really beneficial and good to see. And you know, you can actually see a visible improvement on the statistics, but out of that, a safe working environment is often a more productive environment as well.
So that's
probably the first thing that kind of jumps out. Employee dialogue. Even in my position today, I mean, I spend a lot of time with my leadership team, and one of the things I make sure I do is every couple of weeks have just a round table discussion with just employees from across the business. So just me, six or eight of them sitting around a table. We talk about safety, we talk about quality. They're the only two items on my agenda. And then the rest of the hour is spent talking about what they want to talk about. It might be about the state of the business. It might be about the state of the competition. It might be, you know, last year Brexit came up a lot.
Yeah, it might be
about product innovation. So just giving them the opportunity to talk to me. And why we do quarterly town hall meetings, you know, a lot of people don't like putting their hand up in a room of 200 people to ask you a question. In a room of six or seven or eight, they feel far more comfortable to be able to ask you. And you can then have a dialogue with them and ask them follow-up questions as well. And for me, it's about getting a good understanding of how our employees are actually thinking and feeling and what's troubling them. So quite proud of that initiative.
Yeah, because that's really leadership, isn't it? Listening to what they want. I guess you must get some really good tidbits from these meetings as well.
I find out about things which, you know, we're doing or we shouldn't be doing. You know, you get ideas coming up. And actually, it's interesting to watch employees spark off each other as well. And you say, that's a good idea. We're going to take that one away to have a look at it in more detail. And some of them are actually quite simple to implement. Which is great for employee morale, and you know, shows that you are actually listening and acting on their views and opinions. Don't get me wrong, you get some crazy ideas come out as well, which can be quite humorous, but they come from a good place.
Yeah.
And you get occasionally the negative comments, but you know, we work through that, and we, you know, we keep it positive, we keep it constructive, because it's their opportunity to talk to me as a GM, and they don't, you know, not everybody gets that opportunity on a daily basis. So.
No, that's right. I mean, historically, I think I've always been sort of a little bit intimidated by the higher-ups when I was, you know, like an employee. So it is nice to have that quite close relationship in a meeting where you can actually, you know, feel you can discuss your thoughts. And I mean, I guess that's sort of an HR side of it too. So
yes, and you know, likewise, when I used to, early on in my career, if I was in a room of 200 people, I'd be very reluctant to put my hand up and ask a question. So we just try and give people that opportunity to get a little bit closer to me, and vice versa. I get as much out of it as I hope employees do.
Yeah. So that then forms your decision. So do you have a group who you then decide to make the decisions with, or do you come up with the decision and then pass it down to the people below you?
Yeah. So I have a European leadership team who are made up of functional department heads. Engineering, operations, sales, finance. We meet regularly as a team, both European and UK based. And we will talk through about various matters of the day. Now, I have the belief that reaching a consensus decision is always the best way forward, because that's how you drive ownership. But at times, any team will sometimes not agree. And that's where I step in and you know, I will make that final decision if necessary. And if I disagree with a decision, then, you know, I will put my opinion on the table. I will ask for that decision to be justified, just as people have the right to ask me to justify the decision. But at the end of the day, you know, the buck stops with me. I'm the one that gets held accountable from my immediate manager and from the CEO of the company. And so, you know, we have a, depending on the situation, or depending on how we run it, if it's an immediate reaction, an immediate decision needs to be made, well, then it's usually my decision. I expect it to be enacted. If it's a decision that we do have the time to discuss, then you know, we put it on the table to be discussed.
Yeah. So what's happening with Nortec at the moment? Have you made any changes lately that you're really pleased with on monitoring, or are you about to move in a new direction?
So I described 2019 was a year where we implemented a lot of changes, especially to our UK business. Right at the start of 2019, we pretty much put a new leadership team in place following the reorganisation of the business. Yeah. So that included my promotion, new engineering manager, new operations manager. We promoted some senior staff into management positions as part of career development. And last year, we set about changing how we manage our customer base. Through a customer segmentation approach, we diluted some of our product lines where we weren't making sufficient returns.
Yeah.
We restructured our operations, shop floor function, to quite frankly take out some underperforming individuals whose behaviours and attitudes weren't going to be consistent with our values going forward.
Yeah,
that's an example of those difficult decisions.
Yeah, definitely.
That gave, you know, opportunities for people to step up. You know, that's great to see. We did some technological investments around the phone system. Literally just in the last 7 days, we put our new e-commerce website online. And we are in the process of launching some new products into the market as well. So over the last 12 months, we've done a phenomenal amount of change, as well as trying to get the organization rebalanced to be truly customer-centric. So the decisions that we make, the actions that we do, are designed to benefit our customers and benefit the organization as a whole.
It sounds very exciting. So many things going on there. The experience that you've had is obviously taking you to this point. What does leadership mean personally to you? I guess obviously you've sort of explained it in the sense that what you do and how you take the decisions and listen to everybody. But when you're sort of trying to inspire, do you have a sort of a fundamental idea of how to lead it?
Yeah, so I have a clear vision. I have a clear expectation of where I want the business to be at the end of 2020, the 2021.
Yeah.
I have in my head, actually a bit more than in my head, that is actually written down, the steps we need to do to get there. So from a leadership perspective, it's for me, it's about being transparent with my team about where I want us to go, where I think we are weak, where we need to develop, where we're strong, we need to build on.
Yeah.
It's about setting the example and leading by example. So when I say I want them all to take an active role in safety, you know, do it, lead it, do it by example. You know, be prepared to make those tough decisions. You can't be in a role like mine where you think every day is going to be easy. Have the difficult discussions, have the difficult conversations with your leadership team, and expect them to have the same conversations with their employees if there are problems.
Yeah.
And get them sorted before they start to become real problems. As I said, set the vision, set the standards, accept nothing less. You have to be quite diligent at times to say, look, I know you're busy. I know we are, you know, we're running at, you know, running at full volume at the moment, but that type of behavior, that type of performance is not acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, you going off and doing something on your own like that has actually created a number of issues in the organization behind you. And so really constantly promoting that one team ethos, because we only succeed when all our departments are working with each other rather than in silos. We've spent a lot of time taking down those silo walls. And then actually, when we do succeed, just make sure everybody takes a step back and just goes, you know what, guys, we did a good job there. Let's just be proud of that. Let's just take a couple of moments to reflect on it. Because you can always overlook your successes very quickly if you're not careful. And people just think you're firefighting or you're in reactive mode. So, you know, last week, because of something we did in January, it was great just to take a lot of our staff guys to one side and just say, look, guys, you know, well done. It was a tremendous performance. Let's be proud of ourselves. We've shown now that we can do this. We need to build on it because this feeling is good. And let's try and replicate that next month and the month after.
Yeah, I guess when you do have those successes and you celebrate them, it feels like everybody's working for the same goal and it's everybody's success.
It is, and I think that's where the setting a very clear vision, setting very clear expectations, be upfront and honest with people about what the targets are for the year from a revenue perspective, from a quality performance, from a customer satisfaction level. You know, what is it that as a leader, I want the business to achieve?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you set the rest of the organization up to contribute to that. And I think if people have, if people know what they're aiming for, if people know what they are working towards, then that's their goal. That's their, you know, that's what drives them. That's what gets them to just keep going that extra mile when you need to.
Definitely. Where do you think this came from in you? Do you think you've always had these leadership qualities?
I think I've been lucky. Yeah, very lucky actually in my life. I had a, you know, a great education, a great school I went to up in Sandbach in Cheshire.
Oh yeah.
Supported by some great teachers who, you know, helped me academically and helped me in non-academic pursuits as well. I had, you know, parents that fully supported me, so I was allowed to, you know, have the opportunity to go to university and, you know, further my career that way. And then during my career, I've had some great role models, you know, people I've been fortunate enough to work for and work alongside. I've been able to learn from, they've mentored me, they've coached me, you know, they've been willing to answer my questions or to work through challenges and problems with me. So I've had this, I think there's something inside everybody, if you're a leader, that you've got to want to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's not, it can be at times be very thankless, while it can also be very rewarding.
Yeah,
I've also benefited from some great coaches and some great mentors in my life who, you know, even today I can still pick up the phone to and go, you know, look, I've got this challenge, I've got this issue, this is how I'm thinking of dealing with it, you know, what do you reckon? Anything you'd advise me against, or do you think I've missed anything?
Oh, right, that's cool. That's
so, you know, I've been, from that perspective, I've been looking, and I also have a, you know, I also have a great boss in the US as well, who, even though we're, you know, an entire Atlantic Ocean and 6 hours apart in time difference, you know, I know I can pick up the phone and talk to as and when required. So.
Wow, that's great. I mean, I just wanted to quickly talk about what Nortek is and what they do. HVAC is heating, ventilation and air conditioning. Have there been, so with that in mind, has there been any major changes in the sort of the products or the ability, innovations in products that have either changed what you're doing or helped you move in a certain direction?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to answer that question. First of all, some of our products are actually regulated by European standards, and even though the UK is now, you know, exiting the European Union, those standards will remain. So around our kind of warm air heating products, we have European regulations to which we must aspire to. In fact, not aspire to, we actually must achieve, otherwise we can't sell our products. So regulation does drive some of our R&D. Air quality is another area where people are getting much more tuned into terms of the air quality they have around them. And so some of our products are designed to improve the air quality.
Oh yeah.
We also have products which are quieter and more efficient from an energy usage point of view, is the other area where we look at as well. A lot of people can control their heating systems at home via an app on their telephone. Where a lot of people want to do that workplaces as well. So how you control these units and these systems is equally important.
Sure.
So our control, energy efficiency, how they look, how they sound are all areas which we're looking at over the course of the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you for taking the time to speak to me today, Richard. It's been really, really informative to me. How do people find you if they want to learn more either about you or Nortek?
So I'm on LinkedIn. Feel free to, you know, just contact me directly on LinkedIn, or they can, my email address is richard.lees, that's LWSE, at nortek.com. Feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to have a conversation. I'm happy to have a coffee with anybody. I said I've benefited throughout my career from people willing to sit down and talk to me and give me their time. And actually, I think now I'm at a stage in my career where I can, you know, I can give something back to people if they want to take time and come and talk to somebody that has been there and done it. Not always got it right. I'm going to be the first to admit that.
Yeah.
But when you don't get it right, you certainly do learn from it as well. And
you certainly do.
I've had equal amounts of successes as well. But either through LinkedIn or richard.lees@nortek.com, more than happy to meet and catch up or telephone call, whatever. I'm you know, happy to share my experience.
That's great. I mean, the reason I'm doing this podcast is for people who possibly people coming into the workforce or looking to make a change. I think the kind of information that you've just given will definitely resonate with a lot of people. It reminds me of certain things that I was going through, you know, in work while I was listening to what you were saying. And certainly the strategies and the just the all-encompassing view that you have is it's inspiring, and it's also nice to know that the people at the top are listening to the employees and taking it on board and just taking a wide range of things, the economy and also the climate change and those kind of things, and how they all interact with business and product. So I really, really appreciate your time, and I'll put the links in the description of this below. But yeah, it was an absolute pleasure, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Brilliant. I'll speak to you soon then, Richard. Thanks a lot.
No worries, Nick. Take care. Have a good weekend. Bye now.